And by the way, this is not just my belief. This is what independent economists have said. Not politicians, not just people in my administration. Independent experts who do this for a living have said this jobs bill will have a significant effect for our economy and for middle-class families all across America. And what these independent experts have also said is that if we don't act, the opposite will be true. There will be fewer jobs, there will be weaker growth. So as we look towards next week, any senator out there who's thinking about voting against this jobs bill, when it comes up for a vote, needs to explain exactly why they would oppose something that we know would improve our economic situation at such an urgent time for our families and for our businesses.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm yours, Alan Nathan. You were listening, of course, to the musings of President Barack Obama discussing how the economy needs a jolt right now via the new jobs bill that he would like Congress to pick up. Assisting me in the opining department to discuss this and a few other matters, old friend of the show, none other than Mark Levine, one of my regulars for this time of the day and this part of the week. He is, of course, a former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. talk host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can learn more about Mark by going to www.marklevinradio.com. Mark, good to have you back.
Always good to be here, Alan. Thank you.
You just heard what the president had to say. Just a quick aside, though. He's been remonstrating against the GOP for not considering his jobs bill when, in fact, the key impediment has been Senator Harry Reid. He's already made it clear that he's not crazy about the jobs bill as presented by the president. I guess it has to do with maybe the trade deal with Colombia and some other countries. But still, why does the president want to blame the GOP when, in fact, it's his fellow Democrats who are stopping him at the Senate?
No, it's entirely the fault of the Republicans. Look, they've said they will filibuster the bill. That means that you need 60 senators to support the bill, which requires 53 Democrats and 7 Republicans. I guarantee you, Harry Reid will allow that bill up for a vote the moment he has 60. He doesn't have 60, so he'll probably have to just try to do it and have the Republicans filibuster. But Reid's not in the way. It's the Republicans in the way.
No, he has made it abundantly clear that there are things about the bill he doesn't like, specifically that trade deal with Colombia. So again, if the president's blaming the GOP, yet it's the Senate Majority Leader, who's most assuredly a Democrat, who's already openly said he's not crazy about this bill and accordingly is not bringing it up to vote, why do we just dismiss him as being any part of the equation and only blame the GOP? It seems a little myopic, doesn't it?
I think the trade deal with Colombia is a very small part of the bill, and it's something that can easily be worked around if there was Republican support. The heart of the problem is Republicans want the economy to fail because they want the president to fail.
Well, that would be like the GOP saying the Democrats really wanted us to lose in Iraq and elsewhere because it would make it easier for the Democrats to take over power. I'd like to not assume that either party leadership is that cynical, but that's just my hope.
You don't have to take my word for it. You can take Mitch McConnell's word for it. He said that their first priority was not the economy, but to make sure that President Obama lost re-election, or take Rush Limbaugh's word for it.
Because they believe by him losing his job, that would be most beneficial to the economy, and therein lies the linking causation. But actually, he didn't say, yeah, that's exactly what he said. When he was pressed about it, he said, I want him to lose his job because I think that will best serve the economy because we'll then have his policies out of the way. So these two are inextricably tied together. But again, all this seems to be a bit moot because the Democrats seem to have had a bit of a change of heart. Now, I was talking about this last hour as well. The Dems were, as you might recall, originally saying that Obama's jobs bill should be paid for by millionaires and billionaires, but was doing so with a tax plan that would have disproportionately fell on those who are not millionaires and billionaires. So as a way to avoid the charge of hurting small businesses who look rich on paper but are actually not, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and Senator Chuck Schumer believe they can now get the upper hand in this tax debate by saying that the line that determines wealth starts at the millionaire status, not below. Do you think they're on the right track?
I think they are, and I want to be clear what a millionaire means. It doesn't mean someone who has $1 million in assets. It means someone who earns more than $1 million a year, meaning they probably have $10, $20, $30 million in assets. Now, that's 0.2% of Americans. That's less than 1 in 500 Americans are in that status. Interesting enough, that was 80% of the people who were going to pay the rates anyway. So the people that were making under $1 million a year, between $250,000 and $1 million, were only paying 20% of the amount. By increasing the rates slightly on millionaires, they could get rid of it and just say only people earning more than $1 million a year. I think it's a great idea because I think most people think if you earn more than $1 million a year, you're pretty rich. You can afford the small increase in taxes.
Now, Senator Schumer is quoted as saying that, quote, there are lots of people who either make $250,000 or are close to it. He added that this was particularly true of small business owners and dual-income couples living in high-cost urban areas. He also stated that, quote, if we're able to draw a very clear line, people above $1 million should pay their fair share, it's much easier to win that argument, unquote. Now, it seems as if he's currently embracing the very underlying argument he once opposed, along with a lot of other Democrats, that being that their original definition of rich was too low all along. Is any of this conversion principled, or is it probably all political?
Well, all you have to do is look at the poll numbers. Interestingly enough, it's not just the vast majority of Democrats and independents, but 57% of Republicans support taxing millionaires, people who earn more than $1 million a year more. So if you disagree with that, you're not only not in the middle, Alan, you're to the right of the middle of the Republican Party, which is pretty far to the right. So I think Schumer is capturing something that captures the vast majority of the American people. And let's remember, the majority of American people support the American Jobs Act.
Well, also, let's remember that, you know, you can make a choice. You can either gravitate to the lowest common denominating perspective or not. There's going to be plenty of times where you could have the minority view and still be right all along. Look at Dan Schechtman, who just won the Nobel Prize. He was saying all along that there existed something called quasi-crystals, these atoms arranged in a pattern that seemed to go against the laws of nature. And when he made this discovery, he was kicked out of his group. He was a pariah in the scientific community. And guess what? Later he was proven correct. Now he's got the Nobel Prize. People are using these quasi-crystals and in manufacturing all over the place. So there are plenty of examples where the majority may have held a particular view but were later proven incorrect. But I want to look at where the Democrats...
True, in a democracy, it's a play to the 0.2% instead of the 99.8%, I think is something that's not likely to win you an election.
Well, yeah, but that's not the measure as far as I'm concerned. I'm always looking for the intellectual argument. I'm of the opinion that to whatever degree you increase taxes is the degree to which you further enable already ongoing waste, fraud, and abuse. But let's give the Democrats props. They chose an appropriate way to go to further bring about their ends. Now, while Democrats have an edge on the jobs bill debate, they still lose in the polls when folks are asked about which party is most trusted on taxes. According to the latest Washington Post ABC poll, Republicans are trusted 49% to the Democrats 39%, within the same poll that finds that most of us are more comfortable with taxing millionaires and billionaires. What makes sense for that disconnect? I'll tell you what, let me let you ponder that. We're going to get a very erudite response, I'm sure, on the other side of the break from our good friend Mark Levine. In the meantime, folks, you are with Battleline, Main Street Radio Network. I'm Alan Nathan. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I'm your host, Alan Nathan. Joining us right now, Mark Levine, congressional attorney, a former congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. You can also learn more about Mark on marklevineradio.com. Good to have you back, buddy.
Good to be here.
I was mentioning just before break some interesting developments as it relates to the Democrats' strategy on taxes. I was talking about how, you know, they do seem to have an edge in the polls on the jobs bill debate, but they are still losing in polls when folks are asked about which party is most trusted on taxes. Again, according to the latest Washington Post ABC poll, the one that shows Democrats having an edge on the jobs bill debate, also shows that Republicans are trusted 49% to the Democrats 39% on the overall issue of taxes. Why do you see such a disconnect, or why do you think this disconnect exists?
Well, it's interesting. I saw that poll. There were a lot of interesting nuggets for both Democrats and Republicans. I found the one most interesting is that 76% disapprove of Republicans in Congress, much, much higher than Obama's approval rating. So people tend to prefer the Democrats on the economy. It's true that people want low taxes, and Republicans have gotten a good reputation about low taxes. I don't think it's warranted because Republicans, of course, want to raise taxes on everyone that pays the payroll tax, whereas Democrats want to keep that low.
Yeah, you say that. I'm trying to figure out where you're getting that from.
From Speaker Boehner, from Mitch McConnell, from Paul Ryan. All of them have said that they will not support the Obama plan to keep the payroll taxes low.
Actually, they're quite open to that as long as it's part and parcel of an overall arching grander plan, which is by itself. But that's something that both sides can claim, isn't it? I mean, they can always do that. They can always claim
that. Obama, I think, would support simply keeping the payroll taxes low. But yeah, Paul Rubin said, sure, I'm for that as long as you cut Medicare and end it and so forth.
No. Well,
on that program.
I'm not going to go with Boehner, but the vast majority of Republicans with whom I've spoken, and believe it or not, a large percentage of the Tea Party is very open to things like getting rid of tax expenditures, you know, tax loopholes enjoyed by some industries over others, because they can see the difference. They understand what's at stake. They understand what people like Senator Tom Coburn, Republican out of Oklahoma, is doing when he's calling upon his fellow Republicans to accept the fact that really the removal of loophole tax breaks or tax expenditures or socialism and corporate welfare. He's even added that, and I got a hold of his quotation right here. Tax expenditures are increases on anyone who does not receive the benefit or can't hire a lobbyist or special interest group to manipulate the code to their favor, unquote. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, if we can accept his assessment, which, by the way, would also ensure that tax rates go down alongside the removal of those tax expenditures. Do you think that we then see a chance to increase revenue in a way that legitimately does not raise tax rates so much as it removes favoritism in the tax code?
I think what Colburn said is terrific. I agree with you. I agree with him on that. I'm glad they both agree with President Obama on this. Of course, when President Obama first gave his speech on these tax expenditures, which you're absolutely right, are corporate welfare, Grover Norquist has said very clearly that if you end those things, he's going to consider that raising taxes. If you stop giving subsidies to oil companies, he's going to consider that raising taxes. And the vast majority of Republicans, unfortunately, have not yet jumped on with Senator Colburn. I hope they do. I wouldn't lower rates because right now we have a massive deficit in case you've forgotten. We need that money coming in. But ending these tax loopholes is something the vast majority of Americans support. It's still something that only a minority of Republicans support.
I just can't help but to remember some years ago that another famous Democrat said, it's a paradoxical truth that tax rates are too high today and tax revenues are too low, and the soundest way to raise revenues in the long run is to cut the rates now. He also went on to say the purpose of cutting taxes now is not to incur a budget deficit, but to achieve the more prosperous expanding economy, which can bring a budget surplus. And finally also added, in today's economy, fiscal prudence and responsibility call for tax reduction. Even if it temporarily enlarges the federal deficit, reducing taxes is the best way to open us to increase revenues, unquote. You know who, of course, that was.
That was John F. Kennedy when he reduced tax rates from 90% to 70%. I don't know any Democrat calling for those rates of 70% today. We had the lowest tax rates we've had in 50 years. I think that as a
Well, you do realize the difference in principle does not a difference in argument make.
Oh, sure it does. It's a big difference. Look, I think 90% is too high. I agree.
Well, the logic is it's better to have a lower rate paid by the many than a higher rate paid by a few. You're against that approach, I guess.
Why not make it zero? I mean, if a lower
zero is not an
is
amount. Zero
better.
Isn't an a zero is not an amount. It's not an amount. It's the absence of an amount.
0.001%. I mean, even you're going to have to agree, Alan. At some point, you got to pay for government. I agree with Kennedy. 90% was too high. I don't agree that the Clinton tax.
No, you're right about paying for government. I like that. But why is it that whenever the president and his fellow Democrats refer to the wealthy paying their fair share, that fair share is always tantamount to whatever the government has overspent?
Well, the point
why
is
that?
Things that cost money. I mean, the
waste, fraud, and abuse cost money. But can't we separate? Why? You know, look, if the bad don't shield, if the bad doesn't stain the good, then nor should the good shield the bad. So, I mean, on one hand, you can say that there's a lot of these things for which our taxes pay and we need, but those realities should not be used as a shield for those who wish to dodge accountability for waste, fraud, and abuse. And a lot of Americans are saying, look, before you take more money from me, why don't you relocate what you've already taken and have lost? Even Obama knew there was hundreds of billions of dollars in waste, fraud, and abuse happening every year. That's how he justified getting Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act passed. He said, we're going to secure $500 billion in waste, fraud, and abuse to maintain the solvency of Medicare. Oh, but on the other hand, we're going to use that same $500 billion to fund the rest of the bill. Now, even though he's guilty of...
As you know, every single presidential candidate for the last 200 years has run against waste, fraud, and abuse. I'm sure there is always some in the government. In a massive enterprise, you're always going to find some.
He thinks $500 billion, that's not some, that's a whole bunch.
Not really. In the scheme of things, $500 billion, nah.
Well, hold it. We're getting into a panic attack over the one point. Wait a minute. We're getting into a panic attack over the $1.2 trillion that'll have to be shaved by a trigger because the deal struck following the debt ceiling argument, And that's only going to be over 10 years, and we're going into apoplectic episodes over it. So, you know, if $1.2 trillion sends us into an anaphylactic shock, then $500 billion is at least worth the conversation.
Absolutely. I'm always willing to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. Everybody is, in both parties. That's the easy stuff. That's why everybody mentions it. But, you know, Paul Ryan wanting to cut Medicare, those things really hurt. At the end of the day, if Republicans want a $2 trillion war, they should be able to pay for it, or they should advocate for those wars they like so much.
Well, actually, the President's Debt Commission had nothing but great compliments to offer, blandishments galore all over the place. They even said the budget released by House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan is a serious, honest, straightforward approach to addressing our nation's enormous fiscal challenges. We applaud him for his work in putting forward a proposal which will reduce the country's deficit by approximately the same amount as the plan of the President's Fiscal Commission. I don't know what the Dems are bitching about.
Well, in the next paragraph, they condemned the plan. So they were being very nice to speak on both sides of the plan. But you always read that first paragraph and not the second paragraph.
Well, I'm reading another paragraph here. We are particularly encouraged that Chairman Ryan's budget looks beyond the recent debates about near-term cuts and recognizes the need to address the long-term drivers of the debt. We are also pleased that the chairman includes a process for Social Security reform in his budget to set the program on sound footing and looks to do so for the program's own sake, not for deficit reduction. That was encouraging, but people don't know about that. Why? Because they're subjected to disinformation with a biased press not interested in clarifying.
No, but you're not reading the second half of the press release where they condemn the press they don't agree with. But they don't
I'm looking at the Gestalt theory. I'm just saying if they agree with this much, even if there's things about which they don't agree.
Because they agreed with so much,
it seems to undercut the credibility of people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who with one broad stroke tried to characterize it as the destruction of humankind as we know it today.
It is the end of Medicare. But look, Simpson Bowles both praised and condemned Obama and Paul Ryan equally because they're a bipartisan commission and they're trying to make everyone look good. They did not endorse the Ryan plan. And that's very clear.
By the way, not much time left, but I got to get your reaction to some of the stuff. Governor Chris Christie out of New Jersey for the 95th time is not going to run. Sarah Palin is not going to run. Who does this advantage most? Romney? Herman Cain or Perry?
I think it makes Romney look really bad. Look, if you had a brain, you knew that neither Chris Christie nor Sarah Palin was going to run. If you look for either of them to run, it just tells you how much Republicans dislike the front runner Mitt Romney.
How does it hurt Romney if the folks that could have energized and detracted from his lead have now walked off the field?
They were looking someone else. That's what shows how weak he is. If people want Palin, it shows that Romney's pretty weak.
But the Democrats, really, the one they least want to go up against is Romney. I would venture that as my guess.
Well,
anyway, always a blast. Mark
Obama.
Levine, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Levine, congressional attorney and Washington, D.C. radio host on Pacifica Radio's WPFW. Folks, you're with Battleline Main Street. I'm Alan Nathan.